Hi, I'm the bit before the theme music. No, I'm the bit before the theme
I'm
music.
I'm the bit before the theme music. No, I'm the bit before the theme music.
I'm the bit
music.
Before the theme music.
I think you'll find the bit before the theme music.
No, I'm the bit before the theme music. No, I'm Spartacus. I mean, I'm the bit before the theme music.
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 No,
I'm the bit before the theme music.
Actually, I'm the bit before the theme music. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's got the IQ of a rabbit.
Yes, but he's got the faith of a child. Simple.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Yeah, it's me, isn't it? I'm the bit after the theme music. Yeah, here I am. Look, it's me. We've been through this. It's me. Do I need to say it again? Here I am. Right, do you want to do the interactive bit? I don't think we even did it last week. Do you want to do it this week? Should we do it? Shall we? Let's go. How are you? Good. Okay, that was a nice one, wasn't it? I enjoyed that. So, right, what's new? What have I got to talk? Do you know what? I tell you what's new. Nothing. This episode is new. Other than that, I have nothing. No one's emailed me, or no one of any note. That's an awful thing, isn't it? Sorry. Everyone that emails me is perfect. But I don't think I've got any actual emails to discuss. So should we just get into the episode, or do you want to, like, you know, hang around a bit? Yeah, I think we need to get into the episode, don't we? Yeah, that was silliness hanging around. Right, okay, let's start with this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a
humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
This episode's version of A Christmas Carol is another silent one. Yeah, and I'll tell you something interesting. Not that interesting, don't get excited. I've already done a couple of silent versions, and I remembered I'd done one, and I thought, oh, I'll do the next one, like, chronologically. And I found this one from 1910, and I'm watching it, and then I'm watching it a bit longer, and I'm thinking, hang on a minute. I've already done this one, haven't I? And I nearly started making notes until it sort of twigged. I'm like, no, I've seen this before. I've seen so many episodes. They're all just blending into... I started watching one the other day with puppets in it, and I nearly covered that one today, and I'm there thinking, I recognise some of these puppets. Have I watched this one already? I do not know. I'm going to have to watch it all the way through. I gave up because I thought, do you know what? I'm not doing puppets. I did that a while ago. We'll go back to the puppets at some point. Let's not talk about puppets. This episode's version of A Christmas Carol is from 1913. And here's something for you. The man that plays Scrooge is called Seymour Hicks. And here's something else for you. He's in another version that I definitely have covered. Yeah, from about 1935, I think it was. I think it was the first talkie version, and it was a really good version. There was a couple of bits that were a bit silly, but generally that was a blinder, I thought. And it's interesting because you've got a few people like that. You've got Alastair Sim. He's done two versions. He did an animated one, and he did, of course, the Alastair Sim version. That's why it's called the Alastair Sim version. It's not. It's called A Christmas Carol, or in the States it's called Scrooge. Basil Rathbone as well, he played Scrooge a couple of times, and I think I've covered both versions where he played Scrooge, yeah. So anyway, this episode's version is from 1913, and it does star Seymour Hicks. Now this version is 40 minutes long, so the first ever version was 1901, then there was one from 1910, one I covered. I think there was another one in between actually. But this was the first one that was actually of any substantial length. It wasn't like a full hour, but compared to the others, it was much, much longer. It was produced by Zenith Film Productions and directed by Leedon Bantock. Now, Seymour Hicks regularly played Scrooge on stage from 1901, so he'd been playing Scrooge for 12 years, apparently around 2,000 times. He'd been Scrooge on stage. Yeah, 2,000 times. And it was the J.C. Buckstone version of the play where he would appear. Now, I was reading about this on Wikipedia, and then I was reading about it in my book I've got that covers every version of A Christmas Carol. Up until about 2000, I think. It doesn't go beyond that. And also, of course, I watched it. And there are some interesting differences between what I watched and what I read. Yeah, and I'll get to those as I go through it. Now, because it's a silent movie, obviously there's no sound. That's what a silent movie is. I didn't even need to explain that. I don't know why I said it. And there's a little bit at the start where you've got a couple of text cards and they talk about the creation of A Christmas Carol. I'll read them out to you. Here we go. Boys and girls, men and women, read and reread A Christmas Carol and take its lessons to heart. The Cratchit family home in the story is suggestive of the humble surroundings in which Dickens was born in the little town of Landport, England. There is also a suggestion of the tragedy of the boyhood of the author, whose schooling ended before he was 12 because of his improvident father, who finally was imprisoned for debt. While in the midst of writing Martin Chuzzlewit, the inspiration of A Christmas Carol came to him. Ebenezer Scrooge, the selfish old miser to whom Christmas was humbug, is a masterpiece in fiction, and now we see him brought to life. Now, in between these text cards that come up on the screen, they've actually got shots of the house where Dickens was born and a couple of blokes walking inside, and they ain't dressed in Victorian clothes, I can tell you that for nothing. And then we see Charles Dickens, and he sits down to write, and it's his hand as he's writing the story. And this was a funny bit, because he's writing with his right hand. And Charles Dickens was right-handed, so that's actually accurate. Anyway, sorry. One thing though, Charles Dickens wasn't an old man when he wrote this. He was clean-shaven, but the guy they've got there looks like Charles Dickens when he was an older man, you know, with like the thin beard he's got, the pointy beard. So they ballsed that up, didn't they? Great start, kids, great start. So then you get the test cards and it starts telling you about Scrooge, who was a tight-fisted skinflint hand. You know the bits. I'm not going to give you all the cards, the text cards. I don't want to read them all out to you because I'll be here all day. And you don't want to sit here all day. Or maybe you do want to sit here. Maybe you want to stand here all day. There's not going to be an all-day thing. This is an all-day thing. It's a regular-length episode. Anyway, as these text cards are coming up describing Scrooge, you see a text card, then it's Scrooge there, right? It's just his face looking at the camera, right? He looks like a dirty old tramp. He's got part of his hair sticking up at right angles from his head. He looks like he needs a damn good wash. And at one point, he's just yawning, like a person who's yawning, I suppose. But he also has got like a bit of a sort of thick look in his eye as well. It's like, this isn't Scrooge. This is some dirty tramp you picked up off the street. Seymour Hicks should have known better. After 2,000 performances, goodness. Anyway, then Scrooge is hobbling down the street. Hobbling down the street. I don't know why he's hobbling, but he's hobbling, right? And it's the middle of winter. A bunch of kids come up and they're all throwing snowballs at him. That's nice, isn't it? Yeah. And then he sits on a bench to read a book. It's like, it's the middle of winter, mate. There's snow everywhere. No one's sitting on benches to read books in the middle of winter. Your office is just round the corner. And then a bunch of kids will come up and shout, Merry Christmas, you old git, or something. And Scrooge grabs one of them, and it looks like he gives him a right old beating, as well as like, bam, 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 with his fist. I think he might be sort of telling them off. He might have to slow it down to see if he actually makes contact with the kid. But I'll tell you what, when he lets go of him, that kid soon scarpers. Yeah. And then Scrooge goes to his office. Well, he should have done it in the first place, mate. For a start, he'd be a lot warmer. Well, I say that. We know how cold his office is. And for a finish, you wouldn't have a bunch of kids giving you a hard time in the street, would you? Anyway, then Bob and Tiny Tim turn up, and Bob is giving Tiny Tim a piggyback. So he's on his back, rather than like on his shoulder, which it says in the book, he's carrying him piggyback style. Okay, gets to work, he's like, see you later then, Tim. He goes into work. That's all well and good. Where's Tim off to then? Because he's like hobbling again. Yeah, he's copying Scrooge, apart from he's got a crutch. He's got like a real hobble. And it's like, Bob's carried him all the way there. And it's like, right, off you go. If he's going home, it's like, you should have just left me at home, Dad. It would have saved me a lot of hassle and a lot of trouble for my poor leg. And he's only tiny as well. He looks about, what, 6 years old maybe? Some 6 year old. It was a different time back then. You could leave a 6 year old in the street. They'd be fine, probably. Anyway, along comes Fred. And there's all these kids hanging around outside Scrooge's office. And he starts giving them all money. Yeah, he's giving them cash. If I'd known they were dishing out cash, I'd be hanging around outside Scrooge's office. Yeah, so he gives all these kids cash. And then he goes in to see Scrooge. Now, obviously, this is a silent one. But then you get the text as people are having conversation. The cards come up on the screen. And the text, they've kept reasonably close. Obviously, the scene is a lot shorter because it'd be all text cards, wouldn't it, if they had the whole lot? Because it's quite a long conversation him and Fred have. But they keep it fairly close dialogue to the book, so well done for that. And Fred invites Scrooge round for dinner, and Scrooge ain't interested. So Fred leaves. The next person to come in is a poor woman. And this is what Cratchit says. The lady needs help, Scrooge. She is poor. And then the text card that comes up is, well, that's a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. That's the conversation you have with Bob, mate. Don't start having it with this lady that's just turned up. And also, this is how the conversation goes between Scrooge and the lady. I'm going to read it out, okay? This is how it goes. So he says, a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December, right, as she comes in, although it looks like it's her mouth moving. Then he says, aren't the poor lawn treadmill working yet? How about the workhouse? She says, many can't go there, sir. Many would rather die. And he says, they better do it and decrease the surplus population. I recognise that conversation, but in the book, he doesn't have it with some poor beggar woman, does he? No, he doesn't. He has it with a portly gentleman. In fact, two portly gentlemen. Then Scrooge gives Cratchit a telling off for this, right? And then it sort of cuts to a bit later, and Bob Cratchit is trying to get a shovel full of coal and put it on the fire. And Scrooge's like, don't you touch my coal, Cratchit. You put that back. Those aren't his exact words. I don't want to give you his exact words because I can't be bothered. Then in comes who you think is the portly gentleman, and apparently his name is Middlemark. Interesting aside for you, he is played by J.C. Buckstone, and that's the guy who wrote the play that Seymour Hicks appeared in, the adaptation of A Christmas Carol. Yeah. Now, in my book, and also in Wikipedia, it says, we also see the character of Middlemark giving away food to the poor before making his call on Scrooge's office. Well, we don't see that in this version. I don't know what's going on. Now, here's the thing. This version was released in 1913 in the UK by Zenith Film Productions. But the version I watched was the 1926 re-release from Pathé Films. They re-released it in the States, yeah, 13 years later. So it may well be that they've edited it a little bit. I don't know. Otherwise, I don't know why my book and Wikipedia are saying that there's other bits in it. And also, when they did that, maybe they messed around with the text cards. I don't know, because otherwise, the conversation he has with that woman makes no sense. Makes no sense, kids. Yeah. Anyway, that's something, innit? In the version I watched, Scrooge has a conversation, as he does in the book, like with the portly gentleman, and he says, I can't afford to make idle people merry. Could you please leave? And the guy leaves. That's what happens. Then Cratchit asks if he can have the day off, right? Or at least Scrooge is like, I bet you want a day off, don't you? And Cratchit's like, well, if it's convenient, yeah, that'd be nice. And he's like, well, I'll give you the day off. I'm not happy about it. He doesn't say the bit about picking a man's pocket, because obviously we've had that earlier on. And then he says, here, you can have this pen. Maybe you'll work harder with it. Gives him a gift of a new pen. Yeah, nice, I say. Because none of the other versions does he get any gifts, does he? Not at least until the end. Yeah. Okay. So then Scrooge is like, right, time for bed, I suppose. And he doesn't leave his office. It's like he lives in his office. So he goes out to draw the curtains, and there's kids outside shouting, oh, give us some cash, give us some cash. He's like, no, I'm not giving you anything. And then he sits down on his big armchair in front of the... Before that, he actually goes up to his cash box, right? Like a real miser, gets out his big bag of gold, and he's just sat there. he sort of tucks it under his shirt to begin with. And then he sat there on his big armchair in front of the fireplace, just going through his cash, going, oh, lovely money, how I love you. Yeah, there's that. And then he falls asleep, which I don't like. I've never been a fan of that. I do not like it when Scrooge falls asleep. I think he should be wide awake when each of the ghosts turns up or when Marley turns up. Anyway, he falls asleep and Marley turns up. And when he turns up, Scrooge falls out of his chair and is like rolling on the floor. Oh no! Yeah, it's very dramatic. Very dramatic. This whole thing. Don't forget, Seymour Hicks was a stage actor. This was his first film role that he played. And back then, because they were silent films, you had to be pretty dramatic anyway. And Marley is wrapped in like white sheets and has a whited out face. And he's also got the handkerchief tied around his head. And I want to point out that he talks a little bit about, you know, why I'm here, but he is all the ghosts. And he actually says to you, "Now I come to you representing the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and yet to come." So yeah, he's representing those ghosts. And at one point he even says, "At the moment I'm..." I don't forget how he words it, but he's like, "As the ghost of Christmas present, I will show you this." So this conversation is 24 minutes in out of a 40-minute film. Now don't forget, I talked about this in the last episode. The first chapter is quite a long one, but it's only like a fifth of the book. They've done it again. It's like they've made so much of the first part. 24 minutes until Marley is like, "Right, now I'm the ghost of Christmas present." Yeah, so there's only 16 minutes left. Okay? Okay. What we get here is a double exposure. Now, they've already used a double exposure for Marley. So is this a triple exposure? I don't know. But he's there talking and saying, "Oh, do you remember when you was at school that time? Yeah, you hated it, didn't you? You were a sad little boy at school. But then your sister turned up. And that sister, you rejected her in later life, didn't you?" Well, I don't know if that comes across in the book, because I don't think that's mentioned. So, you know, added a bit there, didn't they, for no reason. And then we see his sweetheart, Belle. I don't know if they call her Belle, do they? I don't care. And she's just there talking. And obviously it comes up on the screen, the text card saying, "Ah, another idol has surpassed me." And this is sort of a double exposure. It's like he's looking at the visions that are sort of projected onto the wall, but I don't think it is projected. I think it is, well, I'm sure it's not projected. I'm sure it's a double exposure or triple exposure is the way they've done it. Yeah, so she's just stood there saying that stuff. You don't see a young version of himself talking to her and then breaking up. It is just her. Yeah. Then it's the ghost of Christmas present. Obviously, still Marley. And he says, "Look, have a look at this. This is the Cratchits having a nice Christmas dinner." And we see the Cratchits all gather around the table. And they are having a nice Christmas dinner. And it's the line about, "A toast to Mr. Scrooge." And she's like, "Oh, give him a piece of my mind to toast on." Is it toast? To feast on. The founder of the feast. Yes, sorry, I wasn't paying attention. And I'll tell you what, right? The Christmas pudding is massive. It's like bigger than someone's head. It's huge. It's like a football. And not like an American football. It's like a soccer ball, you'd call it, if you're in the States. Yeah, it's like a proper football. Massive it is. And what's annoying here is Scrooge is sort of rolling around on the floor going, "Oh, look at this. Oh, it's terrible." Oh. And the double exposure is actually like on Scrooge. So Scrooge is actually behind it. Even though he's meant to be looking at it, he's looking at this wall. But yet the double exposure is sort of hiding part of him. You do need to watch it to understand exactly what I'm saying, but just picture that, really. He's there, and he's not looking at the picture because the picture's happening behind him because it's projected onto him. Oh, who cares? They were doing their best. Don't forget, this is over 100 years ago, okay? So they've all had this lovely dinner. It's not a particularly long scene. And then Scrooge says, "Oh, will Tiny Tim die?" And Marley, who is now the ghost of Christmas yet to come, says, "Well, I don't think he's going to survive. Have a look at this." And then we see Tiny Tim dying in his bed. Yeah. And then we see Scrooge's gravestone. So it cuts from Tiny Tim. That's all you get from the future. Tiny Tim and then Scrooge's gravestone. And Scrooge is like trying to grab the gravestone. Like, "Oh, no, I can't." But it's, again, he's like behind the double exposure. So it's like he's going, "Oh, get this away." And it's like, "No, it's on the back of your head, mate." And then, right, that's the end of it. Yeah, that's the end of it. And then Scrooge says, right, yeah, "I'm not the man I was." What? The man you were when? 6 minutes ago? Because I checked on the timer and it was only 6 minutes of all three ghosts. "I'm not the man I was. That was 6 minutes ago, Scrooge. This is me, Scrooge. 6 minutes later, Scrooge. I've completely changed." Then Marley like reverses that. I don't know why. He walks backwards out of the room. He actually walks through Scrooge because of the double exposure thing. He's like backs around. Scrooge just collapses on the floor. "Oh no, I'm a different man from I was 6 minutes ago." Oh. And then he wakes up again. I'm not happy about this. Waking up bit's fine, isn't it? It's the going to sleep a bit because he's in his... I didn't like him going to sleep. Anyway, who cares? He gets up and he says, "Ah, fantastic. It's still Christmas Eve." How'd you know that, mate? I'll tell you how you know. Because you're only there for 6 minutes, weren't you? And it's like straight after Bob had left, there's no cuts in between. So it's like Bob leaves, Marley turns up, 6 minutes later, he's a new man. So it is still Christmas Eve. And it actually is still set at Christmas Eve. This bit is. It's not the next day. Yeah. He goes out, shouts out the window, "Oi, boy in the street, come in here." The boy actually comes in, right? And he says to him, right, "Tell me, is Tiny Tim still living?" And the boy is like, "Yeah, what, Tiny Tim, yeah. Because we live in a city of about, what, 8 people? Yeah, Tiny Tim's one of them. Yeah, I know him, yeah." And it's like, "Is he still living? Hang on a minute. It was only 12 minutes ago that Bob bloody left. I'd like to think he hasn't lost his son in those 12 minutes. He could have. Don't forget, he left him in the street to hobble home on his own. But anyway, the boy says, "No, he's fine. Don't panic." "Really? When was the last time you saw him? What, you're going around hanging around Bob Cratchit's house just checking on Tiny Tim regularly, are ya?" And there's no need for that. Didn't even need that line in there. Anyway, he says, "Go and buy the turkey." The boy says, "What, the one as big as me?" And Scrooge is like, "No, the one as big as me. Because they're both about the same size. I say he's a boy. I'd reckon no more than 2 inches in height difference, if that. He's almost a full-grown man." Scrooge doesn't say, "No, the one as big as me." But you get my point. Because the boy's very big. Then, right, this is just bizarre. The text card says, "He imagines himself enjoying the feast with the Cratchit family." And the next scene is Scrooge toddling in. He's actually toddling. The way he's walking, I'd call it toddling. The way he's walking, into their house, right, yeah? And they're like, "Oh, come on in, come on in." He's got this big smirk on his face. Toddling. No limp anymore. He's lost his limp. That's healed. Yeah. Because of that 6 minutes where he's a changed man. That's the thing that changed. He's lost his limp. Toddling in, like, big stupid smirk on his face. Sits down at the table and they have a toast, okay? Because he's there imagining himself having Christmas dinner. Don't forget, this is still Christmas Eve. This is happening, right? But he's just imagined it. It's literally, that never happens. He's just imagined it. What? 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 Then during the scene, he pulls out some mistletoe, gets a kiss off Miss Cratchit. What's that all about, dirty boy? It's like, you're coming here, toddling around with a smirk on your face, kissing my missus in your imagination. That's why it's in his imagination, isn't it? Yeah, fantasy, isn't it? Yeah, I reckon. Well, I'm just saying, kids. Why else would he imagine? I can't comprehend why they get that scene if it's just him imagining it. It could have imagined him riding a unicorn over a rainbow. And then pulling out his mistletoe and kissing that unicorn, a dirty boy. Right, can we move on? The carol singers are outside again, all going, "Give us some money." So he just chucks a lot of cash at them this time. He's just throwing it out the window. "Go on, have some of that. Have some, catch it then. It's getting lost in the snow. Just throwing money at him. Literally throwing money at him." And it says, the next text card, right? Scrooge decides to make a round of Christmas Eve calls and to tell Fred that he will be round tomorrow for Christmas dinner. So it is still Christmas Eve. So he's imagined him going and having dinner with Bob Cratchit, right, for the turkey, which got sent there the night before. That's handy, actually. He's sending it the night before. She's got a chance to get it all prepped up. That is important. But then he goes to tell Fred. So the whole imagination scene makes no sense at all, because he goes round Fred's anyway for dinner. We don't see any of that. None at all. Okay? The next text card comes up. You see him walking out of the house. That's to do his Christmas Eve calls to tell everyone, "Yeah, I'll be coming around for dinner tomorrow." Or, "Hello, it's Christmas Eve." I don't know what he's doing. Anyway, then it's the morning after Christmas. And it says that on the text card. Okay? I'm not getting confused here. We don't see Christmas Day at all. It's the morning after Christmas, and it's the same bit with, like, Bob. "Oh, you're late. What time's called this? Oh, I'm going to give you loads of money. Yay!" And we all love everyone. And then Bob Cratchit runs off, and as he's going, he's saying, "Oh, as Tiny Tim would say, God bless us, everyone." And that's the end. There you go. And if you want to watch it, it's on YouTube. I tell you what, though, I watched it. I started watching it. I was like, it's a bit slow, isn't it? Those text cards are on there for ages. I don't know if, like, back then, people in the slow readers group or whatever. But I watched it on 1.5 speed, and it was still fine. Even when they're walking around, it looked fine. So if you want to watch it on 1.5 speed. You'll get through it in about 27 minutes, won't you? Job's a good 'em. Yeah, I'm not going to go out of my way and watch that one again. Really, I'm not. But, you know, I hope you've learned something today. Yeah. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
When you run a tiki bar, you have to exercise self-control or things will just be chaos. So I am very disciplined. I never touch a beverage stronger than gin before breakfast. So in episode 111, during the Smile of Joy segment, I was talking about how Jack had contributed an idea to go out and pick up trash in your neighborhood. It was a great suggestion, and he and his family actually did it, not just thought or talked about it, which is very inspiring. However, during my description, I mentioned how Jack was in his yard when he saw another family collecting trash, which gave him the idea. When the show was broadcast, Jack mentioned that he wasn't in his yard. He was in his front garden. My "Do you hear what I hear?" alarm was silent. I thought I had made a mistake. Instead of him being in his yard, he was in that cleared and segmented area of the yard where you grow flowers or vegetables. You know, the garden. And being a professional gardener, it only made sense to me that he would have a front and back garden to grow all the plants for his work. But then he said something curious. You might want to talk about that one on Do You Hear What I Hear? And I thought, talk about what? What did Jack mean? Most of the different UK words that I review here are often well known to Americans. Lift, boot, jumper. But garden? Everyone knows what a garden is. However, when I looked into it, I realized that I had never heard how the Brits use the word garden. They are referring to the whole outdoor space around the home. It is what we in America describe as the lawn or the yard. This was new to me and confusing. In the same way that we might say we have a front and a backyard, the English will similarly divide their garden into a front garden and a back garden. Plus, in the bigger garden, they will also have a specific smaller area called a garden as well. Something that might be called a kitchen garden, herb garden, or vegetable garden. And if and when they ever use the term lawn, it is in plural, lawns, and generally refers to those large rolling grounds that you might find at a country manor. Okay, so now I was a little puzzled. Gardens within gardens. What is really maddening, though, is how they use the term yard, which means the exact opposite of what we say in the U.S. A British yard is an uncultivated area with no greenery. It might be where you keep your trash, tools, or bikes. Their yard is usually a paved area or hard ground on the side of or behind a house. You know, the tiny space that has concrete, bricks, or asphalt, like a car park. Or it can be attached to a business where they might store equipment or supplies out in the yard. Small English townhomes might only have a yard. Larger properties may have a yard and a garden, and even the most posh homes will have a yard, like a stable yard, that are not part of the garden, and maybe lawns as well. Again, this all means different things depending on where you live, and if an American inadvertently calls a garden a yard in the UK, it's an insult. So, what I need to do now is to adjust my thinking. I guess there's no more yard work or mowing the lawn. Let alone the next time I listen to Octopus's Garden, I am just blowing my own mind. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Yeah, one thing I will say is we do call a lawn a lawn. The lawns thing is more for like large properties, country houses and that sort of thing. You might refer to the lawns, but we would refer to the grass as the lawn in our garden, which you'd call a yard. Yeah, and also when he says like we'd call the concrete bit the yard, not so much down south. I think it's more of a northern thing where they call it the yard, I believe, anyway. But good one again, Bob. Yeah, it's funny. I'm surprised you didn't know that we called our yard the garden, but now you do. Yeah, otherwise I'd be a yardener, not a gardener, would I? I don't know. Anyway, Bob will be back in a bit. Now it's time for this. Boy Boys and girls, this joke was sent in by Pamela Wooten, and I reckon she just sent it in because she likes hearing me say her name, apparently, in my fantastic English accent. Pamela Wooten. Pamela Wooten. Yeah, do you know what? I've got a feeling I've had this joke before, but I'll read it out anyway, because, you know, Pamela wanted me to. So, are you ready? She's actually put, right, I found this Christmas joke online. You may not find it funny since you are your own boss, as am I, so it really doesn't apply to us. That's not the reason I don't find it funny, Pamela. That is not the reason I don't find this funny at all. Here comes a joke. Why is Christmas just like your job? Because you do all the work and the fat guy with the suit gets the credit. Hey, hey! There we go. That's your joke, kids. Thank you to Pamela Wooten. Let's move on. Boys and girls, this is a very short version of Christmas All Over the World. Now, do you remember in the last episode I talked about the Yorkshire Christmas pie, which was like loads of birds stuck inside another bird, shoved inside another bird, shoved inside a pie? Well, while I was researching that, I found out about a very interesting tradition that seems to happen only up north and doesn't happen down south. And what it is it's eating cheese with your Christmas cake. So, in the UK, Christmas cake is a thing. It's very, very similar to Christmas pudding, but they're slightly different. Now, I believe that their origins started the same, and then at some point they sort of split off so that you had your cake and then you had your pudding and they're separate things. But Christmas cake is a very dark, dense cake loaded with dried fruits like raisins and currants and that sort of stuff with loads of rum or brandy in it. And usually, to my distaste, it has a layer of marzipan around the outside and then thick hard icing around that. It's almost identical to a wedding cake, or at least a wedding cake that we'd have here in the UK. I've never been a fan of wedding cake, and I've never been a fan of Christmas cake. My mum cooks one every year and I've no idea what happens to it. It must only be my dad that eats it. I've never seen either of my brothers eat a slice of it. I've never touched it, but she does it, so why does she do it? Like, we're talking every year. It's there. So someone must eat it. I can't imagine she makes it and it just gets chucked out. I've got a feeling, because it's so full of rum, or brandy, I think she uses. Does she, or sherry? Whatever she uses in it, it lasts longer. So you don't have to worry about it going off and getting mouldy. I think she just puts it in my dad's lunch. He gets a big chunk of it every day. Now, like I said, the main reason I don't like it is the marzipan. Never been a fan. The cake itself, I expect I'd quite like. Not when I was younger. My tastes have changed. But yeah, I think I'd enjoy it. In Yorkshire, they'll eat Christmas cake with a slice of cheese on top of it. Yeah. I'd never heard of this until I started researching that segment from last week. Never heard of it at all. So, this dates back to at least 1871, and I want to read out a little bit for you that I found online. It says, the eminent Yorkshire food historian Peter Breers has traced it back to definitely at least a Victorian tradition, and the first written reference we found is from Joseph Lucas's book from 1871, Studies in Nidderdale, Yorkshire. And this is what it says. On Christmas Eve, one Yule cake is given to each member of the family along with a piece of Christmas cheese. As a rule, part of it is left for Christmas morning and eaten at the breakfast. Yeah, and it's really popular. Like, in cheese shops in Yorkshire, I mean, I don't think I've ever been in a cheese shop. I do know that they exist. But in cheese shops in Yorkshire, they also sell Christmas cake, or often just fruit cake, that you can have with your cheese, or the other way around. You can have the cake with the, yeah, and they have a big slice. Now, normally, they say the cheese they'd have on it is Wensleydale. Now, Wensleydale is a Yorkshire cheese. And from what I read, this is a cheese that's made in the spring and summer, but it takes so long to ferment. It's a winter cheese when you eat it. That's when it's actually ready to be eaten. So sort of like, you know, Christmas time, the Wensleydale's ready. Let's chuck it on some cake. Now, I'm not a fan of Wensleydale. I've had it. I think it's a little bit dry, a little bit too crumbly for me. I like a nice, rich, mature cheddar. But here's the thing. Earlier, I said, I don't like Christmas cake. I've got no time for it. got no time for it at all. It's an eyesore, or at least it used to be an eyesore to me. I'd see it and I think, what on earth is that doing in my house? Obviously, these days, I don't live at home anymore with my parents. Well, I do live at home. I live in my home. Okay, they live in their home. It's different homes. That used to be my home. Can we not get into that? Here's the thing. As soon as I read this article, I imagined myself eating a slice of Christmas cake with a slice of cheddar on top. And I thought, that sounds delicious. So this year, kids, I'm doing it. Cheese on Christmas cake, I'm all in. I will let you know how I get on. That's a few months away. If you're binging it, it's not a few months. It might just be a few hours away if you're binge listening to this podcast. Yeah, of course, I won't tell you until like the January episode, although I don't normally do an episode in January, so it'll be February. So you're going to find out in February if I like cheese on Christmas cake. There you go. Yeah, so if you want to try it, kids, get your fruitcake. Now, I know fruitcake is fairly popular all over the world. It's probably not quite the same as in the UK. And I know marzipan is fairly rare outside of the UK, or at least I know it's fairly rare in the States. I don't know if it's something that's eaten much in Europe or whatever. I don't know. So you could just have your fruitcake, as long as it's a nice dense one with a slice of cheese on it. Give it a try. Let me know what you think. Anyway, that is this episode's Christmas All Over the World, a tradition that's very popular in Yorkshire, hasn't really made it down south. But for me, this Christmas, it will. Now let's do this.
Fading joy and surprise, and the gifts we despise.
It's craptacular.
Boys and girls, we haven't had this segment in years, literally years. Yeah. And no one sends in their worst ever Christmas presents. There's three of you out there. Send me in your worst ever Christmas presents you've had. Right, do it. Do it now. Or do it like later on. But do it at some point. But I thought, you know what? I'll just go online and I'll just find a few. And I found a BuzzFeed article that's got some on. I thought I'd read them out and share them with you. Because they're quite funny, some of them. Right, here we go. Here's the first one. I was a third grade teacher. One of the students' mums had her own business selling sex toys at home parties. She gave me a vibrator, which I opened in front of the whole class because the girl insisted I open her present. The mum wrote me a note that said it would keep me warm on cold winter nights. Yeah. I mean, that's not necessarily the worst present, is it? It's just the fact that she had to open it in front of the kids. And then all she has to do is say, well, kids, it warms you up, look. Because it says on the note from this girl's dirty mother. I'm sure she didn't say that. Okay, that's number one. Number two, this is a good one. My mother-in-law gave me lingerie and then told me to go try it on. Well, that's not a bad gift either, is it? Was she got to come parading in with it? I don't know. Number three. Oh, listen to this one. Right, this is what they got every year. Right, nothing. Which is what I got from my now ex-husband for 2 decades. 2 decades! You know, that's one of my biggest headaches, is every Christmas. You've got to try and find something wonderful to give to the wife, haven't you? You can't just get away with giving them socks or whatever. That'd be glorious if I could. I'd love that. Yeah. But to get nothing, that's awful. Nothing says I don't love you more than nothing. Okay, next one. This can't be true, right? It says, I got a you're fired notice from my job. They put that in a gift box. It can't be true, can it? Well, maybe. And it seems like just a really bad employee, maybe. Okay, next one. And it's funny because there's a bit of a theme that it's often ex-partners that gave really bad presents or mother-in-laws. And this one says, I received a meat-based cookbook from my now ex-mother-in-law. She knew I had become a vegetarian and disapproved. Why not just say I disapprove and get someone something nice instead of some passive-aggressive meat cookbook? Well, that's going straight in the bin. Well done for wasting 20 quid. Okay, next one. This is terrible, right? From my now ex-husband, a Christmas card addressed to him with his name crossed out and mine written in. He can't even buy a Christmas card. Do better, ex-husband. Actually, he can't. He's an ex-husband now. Someone else put, I received a gift card with nothing on it. That's bad. Oh, this one, right? I received a kitten. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love my cat and I'm so happy I have her. But when my mum got her for me, it was a poorly thought out surprise. It was even a surprise to my grandparents who I live with and had no idea they'd be getting a cat in the house. She also didn't provide litter or cat food, so my Christmas became a fetch quest of trying to get together everything the kid needed while all the stores were closed. Yeah, plan ahead. At least the books are lit. I mean, you can give him some turkey, can't you? Well, there we go. Next one. I received a one-person tent and lantern from my mother-in-law. We were struggling to pay the bills back then, and she said, in front of everyone, this is in case you guys get evicted. Blinding. That's a good one. A half-used bottle of bubble bath. I know it was used because it clearly ran down the sides of the bottle and had dried up. Oh, dear. Okay, next one. I received peanut butter-filled pretzels. I'm deathly allergic to peanuts. Nice. Next one. During the first Christmas with my dad, his new wife and her kids, they opened designer handbags, DVD box sets, this was almost 20 years ago, electronics, etc. I got a bottle of shampoo. That's bad, isn't it? That's like the real evil stepmother thing. That's a shame, isn't it? Yeah, okay. I'm a 6'3" guy and my ex got me a woman's medium hoodie. I was so mad about it. She had a habit of getting others gifts that are actually for her. That's not too bad if you haven't got her anything, is it? Well, you can have this. There you go. Win-win. My ex gave me a blank photo album and told me my job was to fill the album with photos of us. He basically gave me a homework assignment for Christmas. Okay. Oh, running out now. I got the chickenpox for Christmas. That was not fun. Wow. I don't know if it's the worst gift you received, is it? Did someone actually give it to you as a gift? Did they inject you with it? Probably not. And this is the last one. Socks when I was a kid. Now I want socks. Yeah. You can't go wrong with really decent socks when you're growing up, actually, can you? I do like a decent pair of socks. I buy pretty naff ones. So when you get really decent ones, it feels like you're really treating your feet. And as you get older, you've got to treat your feet. Yeah. Well, there we go. That was 16 of people's worst Christmas gifts. If you've got any you want to share with me, send them in. If you haven't got any, ask your friends. Maybe you can send me in theirs. Now it's time for this. In our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Bob's back, boys and girls. And Bob, repeat after me. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack. I must admit that I am a complete Yule file. I am a self-admitted, enthusiastic elf. I put it all on display for the whole year in my clothing choices, my decorating, and even my podcast. In my mind, Christmas is synonymous with being happy and festive. But I also recognize that not everyone shares the memories and the excitement that goes along with the season. Waiting for Santa, and opening presents on Christmas morning. They have their own individual nostalgic experiences around other holidays. For example, it could be Chinese New Year, Diwali, Ramadan, Eid, Rosh Hashanah, or many others, and these occur throughout the calendar year. We need to recognize the vibrant diversity of beliefs and practices, and how others celebrate their own holidays or festivals. We can promote an inclusive smile of joy. All holidays should be a time for celebration and not used as a source for exclusion. We need to make others feel valued and welcome during their special times, as we like to be. If you know someone who observes an alternative holiday or experience and not Christmas, learn about the significance of their celebration. Ask them to share photos or stories about their customs or traditions. Maybe even offer to work for them. Cover their time or swap shifts if you can, so that they can take the time off to enjoy, as these days are not often recognized holidays. If you have another way to foster someone else's smile of joy, you gift it to Jack. He'll exchange it with me, and together, we'll celebrate with our arms around the world.
That's another blinding one, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, everyone that listens to this pretty much is a Christmas fanatic. But, you know, there's other people that don't have Christmas in their lives, so why not celebrate their holidays or help them celebrate their holidays? Yeah, that's a really nice one. I like that a lot. While I'm here, of course, I have to tell you about Bob's podcast. It's called The Festive Foreign Film Fans, and it's great. It really is. I just listened to the latest episode, and it's about Norway, and I probably told you this before, but after they finish talking about the film, they talk about Christmas in that country. And what's interesting is, I think, how did I not know this? I thought I knew everything about Christmas. How did I not know that's what they do in Norway? I should do it at some point, but I sort of feel like I can't do it now. I'll have to leave it a bit, because Bob's just covered it. But anyway, check out Festive Foreign Film Fans. Now let's do this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Boys and girls, girls and boys, it's the quiz. So, here's the deal. I'm going to ask you some questions. That's the deal. Are you ready? Here comes the first one. Oh, and I will give you the answers at the end. That's a quiz. Question number one. In what Asian language is Christmas ki badhai? Oh, no. The Christmas greeting. Okay, what language is that? Do you want to hear it again? I'm saying it wrong anyway. It doesn't make any odds, does it? Christmas ki badhai. Badhai. I don't know. I got that one wrong, just so you know. Next one. Which Canadian topped the UK album charts in 2011 with his now, you ready, 10 times platinum album? 10 times platinum that album is. Yeah, and it's called Christmas. Who was that? Canadian, remember. In which trilogy of comedy films does Tim Allen play Scott Calvin? And then it goes on to say, who in the first film accidentally causes Santa to fall from his roof on Christmas Eve? We don't need that. Pretty much which Christmas film Tim Allen should do it. Anyway, next one. Sveti Mikolaj is the name for St. Nicholas in which Eastern European country? Sveti Mikolaj. I don't know that one either. Okay, I got that one wrong. Well, I know it now. I didn't know it then. Next question. What is the name of Aldi's carrot mascot? Aldi is a cheaper supermarket store in the UK. What's the name of their carrot mascot who first appeared in the company's Christmas advertising in 2016? If you'd asked me, I would have said it was a long time before then. But no, 2016. And I'll tell you what, kids. The only reason I'm asking this question, because I know a lot of you are overseas and you'll be like, why are we supposed to know that? Well, I covered one of their Christmas adverts in an episode because it was based around a Christmas carol. Yeah, that was a short version, I'll tell you that for nothing. But kids, you should be able to remember it. You want to know the bad news? I got it wrong. I'll give you a clue, this might help you. It is alliteration, okay? Do you know what alliteration is? It's when words start with the same letter. For example, Bob Baker. Okay, that's alliteration. Okay, because they both start with B. So that's helping you. Although, this is alliteration. Well, it's not, because it's a cur sound. But it might not be a curly cur. It might be a kicking cur. Can we move on to the next question? This has taken up far too much of my time. Although the New Testament does not name them, or even say that there are three of them, that's a fact, the three kings, or wise men, or magi, are generally accepted to have what names in common usage? Okay, what are the names of the three wise men? Next one. Who is the only singer to have had a UK top 40 hit with the song Santa Baby? Now, hold on. That's a tricky one. I knew it, because I'm really handsome. But let me tell you this. I want to ask you an 11th question at the end of this, because it's got the same answer as this one. Yeah. Okay? Okay. Next one. In 2016, Stuart Kettle, who was 49 at the time, rolled a Brussels sprout to the top of Mount Snowdon using what part of his body? And it's not the one you're thinking of, Dirty Boy. It's a different part of his body. Okay? Not that one. It's a different part. Easy one for you. In the film The Muppet Christmas Carol, who plays Ebenezer Scrooge? Easy one. Next one. What is a broad-breasted bronze? That's alliteration again, isn't it? The BBB. Yeah, what is a broad-breasted bronze? And the final question, this is your 11th one, but it's also, you know, the same answer as that previous one. Who played the one-off character, the waitress Astrid Peth, in the 2007 Doctor Who Christmas Day episode, Voyage of the Damned? Probably isn't going to help you, is it, kids? But I threw it in there anyway. If you get that one and the other one right, you don't get 2 points for that, okay? It's just a one, it's still out of 10. Right, do you want to hear the answers? Of course you do. I'm not going to leave you hanging, kids. I'm here for you. Question number one. In what Asian language is Christmas ki Badhahi, the Christmas greeting. That is Hindi, okay, in India. So, yeah, I didn't get that at all. Question number two. Which Canadian topped the UK album charts in 2011 with his now 10 times platinum album, Christmas? That was Michael Bublé. Yeah, massive that album was when it came out. And that's 13 years ago now. Wow. Okay, next one. In which trilogy of comedy films does Tim Allen play Scott Calvin? That's, of course, the Santa Claus. And the Santa Claus 2. And the Santa Claus 3. And the TV series, The Clauses. Next one. Sveti Mikuláš is the name for St. Nicholas in which Eastern European country? That is Poland. And I thought it was Romania or somewhere. I didn't have a clue. Okay, next one. What is the name of Aldi's carrot mascot who first appeared in the company's Christmas advertising in 2016? It's Kevin the Carrot. And I thought his name was Colin the Carrot. I've made a fool of myself. An absolute fool of myself. Question number... Oh no. Although the New Testament does not name them, what are the names of the three kings? Well, they are Gaspar, Balthazar, and Melchior. I will accept slight variations there. So if you said Caspar instead of Gaspar, I'll ignore it because I'm kind of cool like that. Right, question number something. Who is the only singer to have had a UK top 40 hit with the song Santa Baby? That was Kylie Minogue. Yeah. She released it in, I'm guessing mid-90s, I'm saying, but I could be wrong. Yeah, so that's also the answer to the 11th question. Don't worry, I'll get to that. Question number whatever. In 2016, Stuart Kettle, who was 49 at the time, rolled a Brussels sprout to the top of Snowdon using what part of his body? It was his nose. Yeah. Why he did that, I've no idea. He may have problems. We don't know. Next one. In the film, The Muppet Christmas Carol, who plays Ebenezer Scrooge? Of course it's Michael Caine. Everyone knows that. But I've got to throw in an easy one for you, because do you remember Benji Pearson? He scored zero, didn't he? Not last episode, the one before. So I've got to have at least one like that, although he's got at least two. You've got to get the Santa Clauses one, Benji. You must have got that one. Right, question number 10. What is a broad-breasted bronze type of turkey, isn't it? Of course it is. And... final one, which is the same answer. Is that character in the Doctor Who special from 2007? Yeah, it was Kylie Minogue. Did you get that? I did. I got it both. But I'm only getting 1 point. And that is this episode's quiz. So I scored a massive 7 points. Now it's time for this. Boys and girls, once again, I don't have a recommendation for you. Yeah, I don't. I'm sorry. Yeah, I wish I did, but I've got nothing. I'm just listening to audiobooks or the same old podcasts. There's this one I've been binge listening. They had like hundreds of episodes, and each episode's like an hour and a half long. It's like a movie podcast. Actually, maybe I should recommend that, and I might have already done it though. I don't know. It's called The Rewatchables, and they just talk about different films every episode. If you're a film buff and you like to know the trivia and stuff like that, you'd enjoy it. I think I've recommended it before though, but I'm still listening to that. Yeah, because there's hundreds of episodes, so it's like hundreds of hours. So yeah, that's it for this episode. If you want to get in touch, you can email. That's totalchristmas@gmail.com. You can go on the website, totalchristmaspodcast.com, or you can check me out on Facebook. That's always nice. Yeah, I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
Griswold, where do you think you're going to put a tree that big? Bend over and I'll show you.